Thank you very much. The title is slightly changed, although it's the same topic, Generating Political Priority for Neonatal Mortality Reduction in Four Developing Countries. There was also a global study that accompanied this. And this is a study by myself and Stephanie Smith at the University of New Mexico. And I want to acknowledge funding from the Gates Foundation-funded Saving Newborn Lives program of Save the Children USA. And I have no conflicts of interest to declare for this. As undoubtedly people here well know, the newborns are a group very vulnerable at birth, with approximately 3.1 million deaths annually, and 40% of under five deaths are to newborns. And this has been a rising percentage across time because neonatal mortality is declining at a slower pace than under five post-neonatal mortality. And this has been one of the most significant barriers to achieving MDG4, the Child Survival Millennium Development Goal. There have been organized efforts globally to address neonatal mortality, especially since 2000. But the focus of this study is slightly, well, it's different from a lot of other studies concerning newborn survival. This is a political study, and we've been asking what factors have shaped the likelihood that the issue of newborn mortality, newborn survival, will receive policy attention within the national political system. And we conducted with local national collaborators studies of political attention, policy attention for newborn survival in Malawi, Nepal, Bolivia, and Bangladesh. The data we used for the case studies were key informant interviews in each of these four countries where we went did on-the-ground research, an average of 26 per study, as well as collecting documents and analyzing these from international agencies, NGOs, governments, and published research, and going through these systematically using a specific qualitative methodology, which I won't go into it in depth at this point, but am happy to talk about if people have questions. I want to emphasize that what we're trying to understand and explain here is policy attention, political attention, that is the degree to which national political leaders and subnational leaders are publicly and privately talking about this issue, then backing that up with the enactment of authoritative national policies and resource provisions that are commensurate with the severity of the crisis. Of course, policy attention does not guarantee effective implementation, and certainly it doesn't guarantee public health impact. However, it facilitates impact, and therefore that's a rationale for wanting to take a look at the degree to which these political systems are paying attention. The overall findings, we discovered that the highest level of political attention for these issues in the countries of Bangladesh and Nepal. We saw emergent attention in the country of Bolivia, but a stagnation since the middle of the decade. And we found a great deal of difficulty of getting political attention for this issue in Malawi. The backdrop to this is we analyzed this using a framework, a prior study of developing political priority for maternal mortality reduction in five countries, which I published in the American Journal of Public Health in 2007. And I'm going to go through this framework and the set of factors and relate this to neonatal mortality and how that explained this, the policy attention across these four countries. I want to emphasize that this framework is informative stage, and these factors that I will present should be understood as hypotheses and probabilistic that demand further inquiry. The whole study is grounded in social science, a collective action research, drawing from a number of bodies of scholarship concerning collective action. This is the framework, and I'm going to go through this quickly and illustrate examples as to how each of these factors will work. But in a nutshell, you have three broad categories of factors shaping policy attention at the national level. One are the global forces, transnational influence, that work from outside the country to shape policy attention. But that's never sufficient sometimes not even the major causal dynamic. There are a whole set of factors connected to domestic advocacy that shape the degree to which an issue is going to get policy attention. And then finally, the third category is national political environment. And these national actors are working in political contexts that they have to negotiate through. These contexts are not of their own creation, but unless they understand these, they will not be successful. So let me speak to each of these factors and relate it to neonatal mortality and what we found. Transnational influence, the global influences on the individual countries. Two factors here. One is norm promotion. And what this is are efforts by international actors to establish expectations about what countries should do. What's appropriate behavior for governments to do? And why does this matter? The ideas, the norms? Well, governments care how they look, just as people do. And furthermore, governments are socialized by other governments and other country actors. So they acquire their policy preferences from other nation states, much like we acquire our personalities from not just our genes, but our school, our parents, our friends, and so forth. So how does norm promotion work on nation states? Well, first and foremost, you can think of the MDGs as a global norm promotion exercise, or in other words, in some ways, it's a global shaming device. Countries want to look good, they don't want to look bad. And we see this dynamic clearly present across all four countries, and especially in Nepal and Bangladesh. They achieved great success, and the governments were noticeably proud of potentially being among the few countries to reach the child survival MDG. They recognized the importance of neonatal survival for that end, and that was one of the motivating forces that got these governments to pay attention to the issue. But it's also, the norm promotion is about ideas, and of course, resources matter. The offer of financial and technical assistance from donors to entice countries to adopt the policy. And of course, enticement matters here because there are scarce resources, and the causes that come with the resources are more likely to grab the attention of countries. Well, we can see some global dynamics at work here across all four countries. The $40 billion in financial commitments from the UN Global Strategy for Maternal and Child Health is the most recent example. But in the case of neonatal and newborn survival, we see in 2000 and then later in 2005, 2006, a major Gates grant to spark and create a program called Saving Newborn Lives at Save the Children USA, which sets up shop in each of these four countries shortly after its establishment and provides a spark, one of the initial sparks for policy attention in each of these four countries for neonatal survival. The transnational influence is hardly sufficient for getting issues on national policy agendas. A second category of factors are crucial, and this is are equally or arguably more crucial, and this is the domestic political dynamics and advocacy that takes place at the level of the nation state. And here I want to speak to five factors. The first is policy community cohesion. What are policy communities? These are networks of actors and individuals who are linked at the national level by a shared concern for a particular issue, such as family planning or maternal survival or neonatal survival. NGOs, government agencies, UN agencies, academics, donors, and so forth. And their level of cohesion matters because cohesive communities have greater authority and legitimacy with governments. Where they're fighting amongst one another, they lose legitimacy, they lose the ear of governments often. To give you an example in the case of neonatal survival, in Bangladesh, you see across time from 2000 to 2011 the emergence of a very tight, cohesive policy community surrounding individuals and organizations who are concerned with lowering neonatal mortality. In Malawi, by contrast, while there are individuals across multiple organizations concerned with this issue, this policy community at the time of our study was fragmented. They almost did not constitute a community, so they were not speaking with one voice and acting as a political agent trying to push the government to address the issue, a clear source of variance between these two countries. Second factor is political entrepreneurship. And these are capable national political champions who push for attention for an issue. And they matter especially for defining issues, inspiring action, bringing together people. You can think of Jim Grant globally for child survival as an example of this. We found strong evidence that this mattered considerably in getting neonatal mortality on the policy agenda. To give one stark example, in Bangladesh, a Save the Children doctor, she's trained at the London School for Hygiene and Tropical Medicine in the late 1990s, ultimately gets hired by the Saving Newborn Lives program, a Bangladeshi national, a physician, and becomes, behind the scenes, one of the greatest, the strongest entrepreneur for pushing the cause of newborn survival. She weaves her way through the Bangladeshi bureaucracy with great skill and convinces many of the national health figures that this has to be on the policy agenda. So this national-level entrepreneurship matters a great deal. A third factor concerning domestic advocacy concerns focusing events, and these are occasions, big public occasions, that spark political attention. For instance, the discovery of a vaccine, or a major conference, or a disaster like a tsunami. These bring visibility to the policy. They jolt the public policy process. They give visibility where things might not have been visible. One example in the case of neonatal survival where we see this at work is the Saving Newborn Lives program produces at the beginning of its tenure in each of these countries a State of the Newborn report, a national report that documents all the practices, the neonatal mortality rate, and all the dynamics. These get publicly launched by ministers and spread across the media. This provides a jolt to the public policy process that starts to give visibility to the issue that it didn't have before. Fourth factor are credible indicators at the domestic advocacy level. And here these are convincing measures that demonstrate the severity of the problem. Why do these matter? We often think of these as measures, as indicators to monitor progress, but we, as political scientists, we think of them as political tools. They can jolt and alarm politicians. They demonstrate that there's a problem. And it's very clear that in all four of these countries, the inclusion of the neonatal mortality rate in demographic, and in the case of Malawi in a mixed survey, was a jolt to the public policy process. In the absence of these data, policymakers could have denied that they had a problem. With these data, they revealed to policymakers that indeed a problem existed. So credible indicators served a political function. The fifth factor here are clear policy alternatives. And the idea here is that one needs means of addressing a problem that is backed by evidence but clearly explained. And these are matter because other things being equal, policymakers prefer to act on things that they can do something about. If they think they can't do anything about it, they're very quickly going to turn to the next issue. In the case of newborn survival, there's been a very interesting shift globally and nationally in many countries over the past decade. If you went around and asked 10, 15 years ago whether newborn babies in resource-poor settings could be saved, most of the experts argued probably not, or a lot. There was a widespread perception probably not, because you didn't have the high-tech NICU facilities in the hospitals to deal with this. But over the past decade, there's been increasing bodies of evidence that shows the tractability of the problem through home and community-based low-tech solutions. The important point that I want to make here is that there's been a shift in the perception of the tractability of the problem that has had positive political impact on prioritizing this issue in countries. The final factor amongst domestic advocacy factor is civil society mobilization. What this refers to, and you can think of the AIDS movement as the prototypical example of grassroots, bottom-up pressure, engaged social institutions, and the reason this is valuable is it places pressure on political authorities to act. It places costs if they don't act and benefits if they do. Well, we found no example of significant civil society pressure coming from the grassroots. Some pressure to some extent from pediatric and neonatal champions, but no major grassroots pressure on these countries, and this potentially presents a weakness globally and nationally for neonatal survival advocacy. The final category I wish to speak of, I've spoken about global influences and then the function of domestic advocacy. is the national political environment, and these domestic advocates always traverse a political terrain that's not of their own creation, but they need to understand that terrain if they are to be effective in getting this on policy agendas. Many factors here matter, but two we discovered matter critically and consistently. The first is what political transitions. The idea here is that if you get a change in the political system and move, say, to democratization or a more decentralized bureaucracy, this alters the nature of the policymaking process. New actors come to the fore. New individuals will shape the decisions that get made. So let me give you an example of how this shaped neonatal survival prioritization in these countries. I mentioned to you that Bolivia had seen increasing attention in the early 2000s, but it stagnated in the mid-2000s. Well, there was a political shift here. Evo Morales, a populist-oriented president, gained power in Bolivia, and his government turned its attention to a broader social development agenda that included especially nutrition as a policy priority. Well, newborn survival folk were a bit caught off guard, and this displaced other issues from the health policy agenda in favor of nutrition and broader holistic social development issues. So the election of this president, the shift in regime, had concrete impact on newborn survival policy attention. The second element of the political environment are existing health priorities, and what we mean here are the priority that is accorded to other health problems, and this can work both ways. So there's so many issues in these countries and across the globe competing for scarce resources and attention. If it's a crowded playing field and scarce resources, then it's difficult to fit your new issue into the game. On the other hand, if your issue is congruent with existing priorities, sometimes you can graft it on to what's already there, and that may benefit your issue. So let me give some examples of how this was at play for newborn survival in these countries. In Nepal and Bangladesh, child survival has been a long-standing priority in these two countries. So when newborn survival as a policy issue comes into play in the early 2000s, they already have a platform to link to. It's part of the child survival agenda, and they just make the case that you want to advance further on child survival, you better deal with the neonate. In Malawi, similarly, there's some convergence, congruence, and diversion dynamics here. In Malawi, maternal survival had gained some traction in the country, and the newborn survival folk were able to link up to some extent with that issue. On the other hand, HIV/AIDS had been a significant policy priority in that country, rightfully so because of the high HIV prevalence rate, but this created diversionary problems, so this was so dominant on that policy agenda, it was tough to find a place in there. So let me conclude with three points about our analysis of how issues got neonatal survival got on, or did not get on policy agendas. First, that this wasn't entirely a random process. There were systematic elements. The overall story here is that international actors first promoted this newborn survival norm, connecting it to MDG4, that nation states had an obligation to protect the life of the child and the newborn in particular, and then they offered resources. Gates, USAID, and other agencies offered resources in order to advance this attention. But that wasn't the whole story. Then national policy communities, these networks of actors of at the national level concerned with neonatal survival, they succeeded or failed to mobilize political systems to the degree that they came together and formed cohesive policy communities, that they included the effective political entrepreneurs to bring them together, such as the Bangladeshi physician I mentioned, that they generated and deployed credible indicators to demonstrate the severity of a problem and the existence of a problem, that they organized attention-generating focusing events such as the State of the World Newborn Reports that got the issue public attention. And then they developed feasible policy alternatives to show to politicians that something could be done about it. They were facilitated or hampered by their political environments, by factors in those environments, including political transitions such as regime change in Bolivia, as well as existent priorities in health such as maternal survival and newborn survival, which often would support child survival, which often would support child survival or newborn survival, and then HIV/AIDS, which sometimes would detract from attention to it. The second point is that, nevertheless, this shouldn't be taken as any formula. It was not a formulaic process. The strategies were quite contextual, and in each country, success or failure was due to a unique constellation of factors. And these communities weren't necessarily going and identifying these factors. They used an intuitive understanding of the political process to negotiate their issue. And finally, that this was more than a medical technical challenge. That the idea that you simply get the medical and technical strategies right and therefore things will follow, that is not how it happened. That's never how it happens. These policy communities needed to give as much attention to the generation of political strategies in order to get their issue on the agenda as to the medical and technical challenges. But the good news is that political priority was successfully generated where they approached this strategically. Thank you.
I must say that it's been more of a pleasure for me to moderate this session than some sessions I've moderated, where speakers tend to go over time and you have the embarrassing task of trying to shut people up. So we have 15 minutes yet. Can I ask the speakers to come forward here? And we'll have questions, comments from the audience. I do want to say that my first overseas experience as a young lad, age 21, going to Somalia, living in the bush in Somalia, one of the things that I noticed that actually sort of startled me was that commonly when you met somebody and wanted to find out about themselves and their family, one of the first questions was, how many children do you have? And the person would say, you know, I have seven or whatever. And very often the sentence reporting on the number of children was followed by the number who are still living. And it was very common, and it was polite if the speaker did not offer the report on how many of their children are still living. The other person would ask, well, how many are still living? It was just assumed that the natural state of affairs was that not all your children survived. And so that's another reason why it's very exciting to me, after a whole lifetime career working in development and particularly public health and much of it in child survival, to observe this attention to child survival, now even increasingly specifically to neonatal survival, and all the research and resources that are going into changing this life experience, where maybe a generation or two in Somalia, people won't ask that question anymore because it will no longer be assumed that three of your eight children have died. Okay, questions, comments. If you can speak loudly, you can speak from where you are. If not, you can come up here and use the microphone.
Question
here, sir.
For Dr. Engman, did you look at HIV and malaria status of the mothers in terms of the adverse birth outcomes? You said you had collected some data on the mothers, but you didn't talk about it.
Yeah. Thanks for that question. I don't know whether everyone heard that. Did we use HIV and malaria? Did we combine the two of them? Malaria, yes. HIV is a little more problematic. In that particular part of the country, HIV is particularly low, and particularly because we used verbal autopsy. You know, unless a mother had been tested or knew her status, this wasn't something that we were going to be in a position to be able to determine, because this was through verbal autopsy. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
2009, or when the study was first conducted, it seemed as though the people who were, patients were getting most of their medical advice from family members. And then in 2011, when the study concluded, it was, the shift had gone towards more community health workers and clinics. Why was that shift made if there was already an identified source of information? Why was the training not given to the family members, and why was that shift made towards clinics?
Can you come up here?
I'm not quite sure how to answer your question. But we concentrated, we're talking about Benin, we concentrated on the community resources in both periods of time. The sensitization sessions were within the community. So what we hope to do is reach those family and friends that were key decision makers, key informants for the members of their family and their communities, so that if the mother had a diarrhea disease episode with her child, she could go to a community member and they'd say, why don't you try zinc? I've heard that this is now the recommended treatment. But you asked about shifting to community, from community members to clinics. Both, we actually trained both sets of providers. We spent a lot of time, we in fact trained every, in every health center in the country. We trained all of the personnel in the health center, because we knew in those countries, and we did a DHS secondary analysis to determine where people went for care, and we knew that in both Madagascar and in Benin, that the public sector was a very prominent source of care. Our program was private sector, so our emphasis was on private sector. So we tried to work in partnership with both, in both countries.
Okay, yeah, you can ask questions too.
Okay, so I'm not going to ask myself questions, but actually I do have a question for Jeremy. First of all, thank you. I think for me this has been a very useful conceptual framework around an issue that many of us who work in newborn health grapple with. And it almost seems to put credence to that comment that one of the politicians made, seek ye first a political kingdom, and all other things will be added unto you. My question and sort of area of asking for guidance from you is this. You know, there are, you describe this very rich framework around which the newborn health agenda or the child health agenda can sort of be advanced. But in a way, you know, one is almost thinking, is there some literature, is there some education you can tell us as to how to maybe one could jolt this a little bit? And that might explain why, for example, I just got back 36 hours ago, having spent a few weeks in the DRC, in the Congo, where we do a lot of our studies, and then spent another week in Mozambique. And both countries have had terrific challenges, particularly in the 90s, and yet the trajectory and the infrastructure that Mozambique has is so admirable at the moment, and you can't quite say the same thing for the Congo at the moment. Even though this is a very useful sort of framework, are there certain factors that maybe the political leaders, because I think governance plays a huge role, particularly respond to certain things, certain niggles that people could prod in and jab to sort of move that agenda forward?
Well, thank you for that very good question. Let me say a couple things. I think the first thing I want to say is that our knowledge of those jabs, the state of knowledge about this subject compared to the state of knowledge that the three of you are addressing, is night and day. So this is the beginning of inquiry about a completely neglected subject. whereas you all have advanced a great deal in the biomedical and technical interventions necessary to address child mortality. So all I can throw out is speculation and hypotheses, which is what you should take my framework to be as, well, not speculation, but hypotheses. That being said, I think the one thing I would, perhaps this doesn't answer your question, but it might lead to answers, and that is to the biomedical and technical folk don't tend to think about the political incentive structures that political leaders act from. And they tend to think that, and I'm not saying you all, just in general, they tend to think that the world out there is rational, and that if you get the technical and biomedical interventions right, things will follow. That's empirically false. So why would scientists accept an empirically false proposition? Politicians have all kinds of incentive structures and political imperatives for pursuing causes or neglecting them. Humanitarian norms are one among many, but mostly they're interested in power. They want to sustain power. They want to hold on to office, sometimes because they want to do good, often because they want to benefit people close to them and themselves. So how does helping neonates survive enhance their power? Well, it might. Because if populaces demand that, if social groups demand that their babies not die and hold them to account if their babies do, then they have political incentives to act on that issue. Sadly, the state in many of these countries, and this was a particular problem across all four, but we saw this consistently in Malawi, was that politicians didn't believe that their political fortunes mattered one iota if the babies die. It doesn't help them gain power. So a strategy, a jolt, is to think in the terms of the mind of the politician, not in terms of the mind of the biomedical practitioner. What jolts them to act? And that means that they have to gain political traction and power if they save babies' lives, and lose power if they don't. So there's where you have to start the strategy from. I hope that at least helps launch the discussion.
Yeah, don't go away, Jeremy, because I'd like to ask specifically, well, certainly from Pavanam and Jeremy, maybe, I'm not sure about the others, in your observation of how the projects were implemented and how some effort was made to address neonatal mortality, what role did, if any, did mobilizing community leaders and religious leaders to make this an issue factor into strategies and the playing out of your activities? What I'm calling for is a discussion of not just what happens politicians, you know, in district offices or national offices or so forth, but at the local level, what role did local leaders who wouldn't be known as politicians play in making this a priority? Do you have any comment?
Thank you. You know, first of all, we want to show that all what we are doing is benefitable for communities. And with that, we'll try to make an advocacy to the community leaders so the politicians can contribute to improve the population health. It's what we are doing. So we have, first of all, to work with community and show them that what we're doing is beneficial, is good, is improving the life. And when the politicians see it, I think it can be easy to work with them. But if you go, first of all, with government, it's not their priority, as I think my colleagues say, that they have, their priority will be how to maintain the power, not another things. So we, development organization, we have to work and prove what we are able to do and improve all action we have at community level. It's how we are doing it in our country. And with that, in some, how do you call it, some meeting, you will try, when we have political leaders, we have to, how do you call it, to bring community to tell them, it's not we will tell them that what we are doing is good. We'll bring some community people with whom we have worked, and they will try to show the politicians that this organization helps us to do this one. What can you do for us? It's what I can share with you.
And Jeremy, do you have any comment on that, or do you consider political and religious leaders part of the, community and religious leaders part of the political system at the local level? Or I see them as different categories, and you were focusing on the politics, but I'm wondering again, to what degree can we effectively mobilize community leaders, religious leaders, to be a part of this process of getting this issue on the agenda?
In many settings, community politicians respond in fear, and it's good when they fear, religious and community leaders. And so often grassroots folk, unfortunately, the politicians don't fear them. In some circumstances they do, but in some circumstances they don't. But they do listen to these community and religious leaders. And so to have that as part of the strategy is eminently sensible means of pushing politicians to act. And sometimes they're barriers to the religious leaders for certain issues, and they themselves have to be neutralized. Yeah. Family planning and so forth.
Okay, unless there are any other burning questions or comments, let's give our speakers a round of applause.